It's a hot button issue we've been dealing with all season long, but in particular now, the illustrious transfer portal.
This is what happens when players have the ability to make a few determinations. And as we've said before, a coach can leave, a player can't. Well, that has changed ever so slightly.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host, Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. A safety, my kingdom for a safety. This is episode 2 of the Signal Caller Podcast, what you might consider an express version of the Signal Caller Podcast. It's going to be a little shorter and a little more to the point in the spirit of getting this particular episode out in a more timely fashion to address the hot topic of the week in Mountaineer Nation, and that is, of course, transfers. Transfers going out, transfers coming in. We're going to work our way into a much larger discussion about roster management. That's a term of art that has really come to the fore in college football more in recent years and almost certainly more in recent months than maybe at any point in the modern history of the game. So why is that? What's changed? What are the things that are influencing that and making it more difficult for coaches to manage their rosters? Not just to build a quality roster, but to sustain the depth needed on both sides of the football and in all phases of the game to move forward. In keeping with our original plan, we're hoping to drop what will now be episode 3 of the podcast this week. In other words, the week of June 10th. And we're going to let this abbreviated version serve as episode 2 to give us an opportunity to discuss this hot transfer topic. We're going to walk you through some of the things that play out when coaching changes happen. We're going to talk about what's typical roster attrition. We'll get into what's atypical roster attrition. We're going to flesh all that out on this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast. And we're going to do that right after this quick message from Mountaineer World, the largest Mountaineer store in the world.
To Mountaineer World, the largest WVU Mountaineer store in the world. Show your Mountaineer pride this season with Mountaineer World. Shop online 24/7 at MountaineerWorld.com. To Mountaineer World, under the big copper roof at Benny's Place in Bridgeport.
You're listening to Mountaineer Football Talk on the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
Welcome back, folks, to episode 2 of the Signal Caller Podcast. And as we touched on in the introduction, we're considering this something of an express version of the podcast. One topic, we're going to hit it fast because we've been asked about it all week. It's the hot topic among Mountaineer fans. I was asked about it when I was at a T-ball game last night. I got up this morning. I received a couple more texts about it. And the question everybody is asking, what's with all the transfers leaving the West Virginia program? Well, first of all, there's also a number of transfers coming in. And in part, this is simply the new reality in which we all exist. And you start with the fact that this isn't a one-size-fits-all proposition. When you're dealing with 18, 20, 21-year-old kids, there's not necessarily one reason that multiple kids will choose to leave a program. Each are going to have their own personal set of reasons, and those reasons can vary across a wide spectrum of possibilities. And sometimes all that is intensified when there's a coaching change, when the paradigm in which a kid entered a program shifts and it changes. Look, some kids don't handle change or adapt to it as well as some others, and you never know what's going on in that player's life. Maybe there's something going on back home on the personal level. Maybe there's something within the scheme or the new scheme he doesn't feel that he fits as well, or maybe there's an isolated academic issue. There's any number of things that could be at play impacting a kid's decision to either stick it out and give a new coaching staff a chance or look for a fresh start somewhere else. You just don't know what could be going on in a kid's life that could impact or sometimes even dictate this very critical decision. There's a whole host of things that could have an effect on a player's decision to transfer out of a program. And doubling back to our earlier point, what we do know about this is these things are often precipitated by coaching changes. When there's a transition in staffs, you expect and anticipate to see a certain number of players leave the program. And again, there can be various reasons for that. Maybe they were recruited in to play a different style of scheme on one side of the ball or the other and don't feel that they fit quite as well into this new scheme with this new coach. I mean, think about it. When your starting center announces his intention to transfer out of your program and drop down a level to play for an FCS program, as West Virginia's Matt Jones did in early January, you would guess his motivations for doing so are probably different than the motivations of an all-conference free safety like Kenny Robinson deciding to enter his name into the transfer portal in June. Players transferring from one school to another for a different opportunity obviously isn't a contemporary or new thing. In fact, West Virginia head coach Neil Brown transferred during his college playing career, as did his predecessor, Dana Holgorsen. For that matter, so did I. I transferred, in fact, twice during my college career. It's been going on for a long time, and it's involved a lot of players, and obviously some, unlike me, that you've actually heard of.
Off the play fake. Wilson puts it up.
Russell Wilson's final game at NC State was the Wolfpack's 2010 Champ Sports Bowl victory over West Virginia, after which Wilson graduated and transferred to Wisconsin, where he put together in 2011 one of the single greatest seasons a college quarterback has ever enjoyed. Back in the 1980s, when Troy Aikman recognized he wasn't going to be a good fit for the new wishbone offense that Barry Switzer introduced at Oklahoma, Aikman decided to transfer to UCLA to play for Terry Donahue, and the rest, of course, is history. Baker Mayfield didn't entirely work out as a walk-on at Texas Tech for Cliff Kingsbury, so he transferred to Oklahoma. We know the story there, and the list goes on and on and on. And there have, of course, been times throughout the history of West Virginia football that the Mountaineers have been huge beneficiaries in the transfer market, especially at the quarterback position, where West Virginia has received transfers like Jeff Hostetler, Jake Kelchner, Clint Trickett.
Trickett over the middle. He's got his man. Touchdown, West Virginia.
And more recently, of course, Will Grier. Transfers are a part of college football, and as we've talked about, it tends to happen more following coaching changes. Since the conclusion of the 2018 season, which of course was Scott Frost's first season at the helm of the Nebraska Cornhuskers program.
It's toughness, it's dedication, it's work ethic. That's what Nebraska is. That's what the people of Nebraska are.
The Huskers have seen 11 players enter their names into the transfer portal. Since Chad Morris took over for Brett Bielema at Arkansas last season, the Razorbacks have seen nearly 30 players leave their program. Look, folks, change can be hard, and when you ask a new coach and a new staff come in and introduce their way of doing things, that's going to involve a new scheme, that's going to involve a new culture, and sometimes that can be a little rough around the edges. We saw some of this play out at West Virginia when Rich Rodriguez took over for Don Nealon in 2001. There were some promising players caught up in that transition. You had players like tight end Sean Burton, who ultimately transferred from West Virginia to North Carolina State, a good player who spent a handful of years in the NFL. Quarterback Scott McBrien, we all know the story there. He left the West Virginia program, transferred to Maryland, and of course made the Mountaineers pay for that fact more than once. But the good news is, as evidenced by that situation during Coach Rodriguez's first year into his second year and third year, these things do tend to stabilize. So long as a staff is building things their way, which Neil Brown and his staff absolutely are doing, we will see a course correction and this thing shift back in the right direction. First of all, it's tremendously good news, maybe now more than ever, that Neil Brown and his staff, shortly after being hired and shortly after arriving in Morgantown in January, he was on campus for basically a month before National Signing Day in February. But that notwithstanding, he was able to retain the entirety of West Virginia's signing class. He didn't lose a single kid. And a matter of fact, he was even able to add a few of his own kids to that class.
We're able to hold on to all 18 guys that signed that were part of that December signing class.
It's times like these that really starts to matter. In other words, think about it. If you're going to have three safeties over the course of a short handful of days, all enter their names into the transfer portal, then you better feel very fortunate that you were able to retain your entire signing class, particularly when that signing class offers five freshman defensive backs who will arrive on campus at various points this summer. Imagine what this might look like had Neil Brown and his staff not been able to keep that class together and lost half of it. Look, you never want to lose talented veteran players from your roster. That is short-term consequences that are very challenging to overcome. That's when the conversation starts about the scholarship numbers being impacted. And when those numbers are impacted, in turn, of course, your depth on both sides of the football is impacted. And then you start to see a derivative impact throughout every phase of your football team, because then you get into special teams and your coverage units and your transition units. Those units are often impacted not just by some of those starters, but also by some of the reserves. So they're impacted in more ways than one. These are some of the challenges that are presented when you encounter some level of roster attrition. It's not that these challenges can't be overcome. It's just that this is the problem you will find yourself dealing with. And it happens to be something you find yourself dealing with more often during times of coaching transition. When coaches are changed and new staffs arrive with new ideas and new expectations, you traditionally tend to see more kids leave the program under those circumstances than they would otherwise. Now, understand that's always been the case, but also try and understand and appreciate that a change the NCAA made last fall has served as kerosene being tossed onto the burning embers of potential transfers and turning more of them than ever into reality by streamlining the process and making it easier on players to transfer out of one school and into another one. And of course, what I'm referring to is the NCAA's transfer portal. I remember two things about the first time I heard the phrase transfer portal. One, it involved now former Clemson quarterback Kelly Bryant, currently with Missouri, a guy who West Virginia will actually face in their week two trip to Columbia. And the second thing I remember thinking about it was to wonder if Kelly Bryant might actually need the help of Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott to operate a thing called the transfer portal.
Energizing.
When it comes to the topic of roster management, this so-called transfer portal sure doesn't make things on that front any easier for college football coaches. And the ink's barely dry on this thing. It got rolling just last October when the NCAA decided to loosen the tethers on players trying to transfer. Unlike the days of yore, those student athletes would no longer have to ask permission from their school or from their coach if they sought to transfer. And this, of course, isn't confined to football. It includes every collegiate sport. The process really is pretty simple. All the player has to do is approach their school's compliance department and let them know, hey, I want to enter the transfer portal. The compliance department can't turn them down, neither can their coach, and for that matter, they don't have to first get their coach's approval. The most a coach can do is delay the process for a few hours or a day or two. Ultimately, the request has to be granted. Now, after that happens and their name is entered into the portal, other schools, other universities can begin the process of contact. Them, unless, of course, the student athlete makes a request to not be contacted, which sometimes does happen. But the means of contact is by email.
You've got mail.
There's no cell phone numbers involved. Email is the means of contact from these other schools. And when you hear it spelled out like this, how the process works, it's easy to understand how some folks suggest this is the closest thing college sports has to free agency. And again, remember, this didn't exist in this form until last October. We're just talking a little over half a year. In the middle of last football season is when this was instituted and when this all began. Now, putting your name in the portal doesn't always necessarily mean you are actually going to leave, but you got to understand there are repercussions and there are possible consequences. Once that notification of transfer actually has a signature attached to it, you have the possibility as a student athlete of having your money yanked. In other words, your current school, the one that you're trying to transfer from, this now gives them the right to reduce or even cancel your grant and aid at the end of that academic term.
Hasta la vista, baby.
So even if you do decide to stick around and come back and return to your team, there's no guarantee that you'll be doing so as a scholarship athlete, because that scholarship might in fact be pulled. And therein lies part of the problem. It's a simple math issue. There have typically been a lot more players looking for greener pastures with their name in the portal than there have been scholarships available out there for those players. In other words, a lot of them are going to come up short. In fact, the overwhelming majority of them are going to come up short because there simply aren't enough scholarships available out there to match the sheer volume of players that are putting their names in the portal. But that doesn't change the fact that when a new coach is hired, in other words, situations as we talked about in the past, that when new coaches are hired, there's often a great amount of roster attrition anyway under those circumstances. Well, now the transfer portal has compounded that. It's made it easier for more players to try and roll the dice and take their chances and look to other possibilities. possibilities at other schools. And yes, that will happen more in general, but it will almost certainly happen more when there are new coaching hires and it's that much easier for a kid to look elsewhere.
Mountaineer Nation, set your podcatcher and never miss an episode of The Signal Caller.
There is one more dimension to all this that's impacting things just as much, and that is the NCAA's increasing predisposition toward granting these transfer players immediate eligibility. Because again, that's something that in the past rarely, if ever, happened. In the past, one of the things that stood to discourage student athletes from trying to transfer was the reality that if they did so, unless of course they were a graduate transfer and a different set of rules apply there, but outside of that, if they did transfer from one major college to another major college, they did so with an understanding they would almost certainly have to sit out an entire year before being allowed to return to game action and competition on the field. But again, something else that happened just last year changed all that. The NCAA decided to modify the waiver process and, in effect, reopen the conversation about the possibility of immediate eligibility for transfers. Early this year, the NCAA's Vice President of Academic and Membership Affairs told the Associated Press, quote, "The membership wanted to put immediate eligibility back on the table. And so whether that resulted in a high approval rate, I don't think membership knew. They just wanted to put that back on the table, and then the circumstances of each individual case would essentially dictate the approval rate," end quote. Under the old structure, immediate playing eligibility for a transfer could only be given if the school the player was trying to transfer to could demonstrate egregious behavior by the school the player was transferring from. But that's now the old standard. Under the new standards, immediate eligibility can be granted if the transfer of the player was due to, and here's another quote, "documented mitigating circumstances that are outside the student athlete's control and directly impact the health, safety, and well-being of the student athlete," unquote. Now, I don't think you have to be a legal scholar to understand that that new standard sure seems to include a lot of leeway and leaves a whole lot open to interpretation. Now, the net effect of this modification is certainly skewed heavily in favor of the players trying to transfer and trying to be granted immediate eligibility. In fact, that same Associated Press article included a data set in which 79% of the college football players who requested waivers for immediate eligibility after transferring had those waivers approved under the new standard. But even with that, there still seems to be some element of inconsistency in terms of the rulings when it comes down to which transfers are granted immediate eligibility and which transfers are denied immediate eligibility. Case in point, quarterbacks Justin Fields, now of Ohio State, and Tate Martell, now of Miami, both transferred and received immediate eligibility with waivers that seemed to be based on little more than the fact they couldn't beat out the other quarterbacks in the programs they transferred from. Try and square those results with the case of tight end Luke Ford. Ford, the number one recruit in the state of Illinois in the class of 2018, ended up signing with Kirby Smart's Georgia Bulldogs, which is where he spent last season. Ford's family lives in Carterville, Illinois, 190 miles south of Champaign, Illinois. That number is going to matter here in a second, because in January, Luke Ford transferred from Georgia to the University of Illinois in Champaign, and he applied for a waiver for immediate eligibility through the NCAA, at least in part because his grandfather had health issues and he was hoping to get closer to home.
Ford left Georgia after only 1 year. The deciding factor was the declining health of his grandfather, who lives in Carterville, Illinois.
And so guess what happened? In the last few days, in fact, the NCAA denied Luke Ford's waiver appeal, sidelining him for the 2019 season. And do you remember how far that town of Carterville, where his family resides, was from Champaign? 190 miles? Here's why it mattered. Because back in 2012, the NCAA established a distance limit of 100 miles in cases such as Luke Ford's. You really can't make this stuff up. So as we get in victory formation and prepare to take a knee to run out the clock on this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast, let's review. When someone asks you, why have all these players transferred out of the West Virginia football program? First, point out that the sky certainly hasn't fallen, and to my knowledge, no rivers, at least to this point, have run dry. And then explain that there isn't one simple answer that really accommodates that question. A handful of different factors have contributed to this exodus of players, but to me, three stand out more than the others. Number one, we have a new coach. When you have a new coach hired, he's going to come in and introduce a new culture and have new expectations. And sometimes kids don't like that. They don't think they fit the culture. They don't think they fit the scheme. And they get their head on a swivel and start looking elsewhere. Roster attrition on some level is expected when you have a new head coach and a new staff come to town. Happens all the time. Moreover, you can't predict the fashion in which it will hit your roster. You don't know if it's going to be some kids on offense leaving, some kids on defense leaving, or if it's going to be clustered at certain positions. No way to forecast that. And if the defections are more concentrated in one position group, that's not necessarily cause to be reading something into it. Number two, the transfer portal, which has only existed since October, has exacerbated that whole problem. What would typically be a loss of players due to a coaching transition has been ratcheted up, and we're probably seeing players leave in greater numbers than we otherwise would because the transfer portal has made it more accommodating for them to leave. And finally, number three, the modifications that were made last year to the NCAA's policy in dealing with players who apply for hardship waivers when they transfer seeking immediate eligibility. The changes that were made favor the transfers and make it easier for those transfers to be granted immediate eligibility, therefore negating traditionally one of the biggest things that discouraged a player from looking to transfer. With the possibility of immediate playing time coming after a transfer appearing to be far more realistic now than before, you're obviously going to have more players entertain the option of transferring from their school to another program. There's a very basic and very simple three-word message that Neil Brown's Mountaineers have been running with as they head into the dog days of summer. Trust the climb. In other words, the hard work's not being done in vain. It's all being done for a reason. And as they slowly but methodically climb toward greater things each day, in the end, they'll ultimately see that reason. Let me tell you something, folks. Neil Brown, this guy, he's all in. He believes in and he embraces the tradition of West Virginia football. He raves about the Mountaineer fan base. And he's building this thing the right way. That means the big things, the small things. In my estimation, there's not going to be a single loose stone in the foundation that he's building under this program. Player relationships are his priority, and he firmly believes that a family environment is what fosters that. He's focused on forging relationships with the roster that he inherited, and it's obvious that he's working to solidify his working relationships with the support areas throughout the building. Mike Joseph and the strength and conditioning staff, and the academic staff, and the equipment staff. It's apparent that he's focused on the best ways that the people in that building can serve each other, and making sure that there's a unified front and everyone's priorities are aligned. Brown's message has been simple. He says he knows the Mountaineers will be great, he just doesn't know when. So ignore the distractions, ignore all the outside noise, and focus on that message. Trust that message. Trust those who stay. But most of all, trust the climb. And that'll do it for episode number two of the Signal Caller Podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed this episode. And remember, if you did, be sure to rate it and subscribe. And stay tuned. Again, sometime later this week, we'll be releasing episode number three. You won't want to miss that. We're going to talk about some recruiting strategy and what that might look like under Neil Brown. And we're going to discuss some West Virginia-related comments made in a Sports Illustrated article by Houston head coach Dana Holgorsen. Some remarks that some folks regarded as polarizing. Just imagine that. Dana saying something controversial. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Neil Brown's recruiting philosophy at West Virginia. All that and at least a little more on the next episode of the Signal Caller Podcast. Until then, folks, I'll see you at the 50.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
The fun doesn't have to stop here.
Be sure to hit subscribe on your podcatcher now and never miss an episode.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback,
head over right now to Twitter at the Signal Caller and get involved.
Join us again next time.
Until then,
we'll see you at the 50.